there's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Good morning. It is time to get up with, wait, what did Jerry say now? If you thought the coach was on the hot seat before, wait until you hear this. Plus, they have found their man in Jacksonville. Can he turn Trevor into the savior they so desperately need? And one last drive across Tobacco Road as Coach K makes his final trip to Chapel Hill. Two of his best players ever will tell you exactly what it means. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now on a Friday.
I mean,
is Jay Will?
He has an age.
He looks exactly the same.
It's unbelievable.
That was Coach K like 15 years ago when Jay Will last week. Delighted that you have chosen to get up with us on this Friday. That's Graziano. That's Ninkovich. And that's not all. Take a look who's here. Ryan Clark has had travel nightmares and still managed to make the program this morning. And Mike T is ready to roll as well. We had news late last night. Doug Peterson, who of course won a Super Bowl with Philadelphia just a few years ago, is the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. That hiring comes 49 days after the team fired Urban Meyer and 35 days after they first interviewed Peterson for that job. They talked to a bunch of people. There seemed to be quite a few people uncomfortable, Dan Graziano, with the structure there, and that made the job less appealing than you'd think it should be based on the fact that they have the superstar young quarterback. How did this wind up working out?
Yeah, it was quite a journey, the Jaguars coaching search. It started with Doug Peterson and ended with Doug Peterson 5 weeks later. Look, I mean, yes, that has been an issue, right? Candidates have gone in with as many questions for the Jaguars as the Jaguars have had for them. This is a team that's lost 119 games in the last 10 years, the 10 years that Shad Khan has owned the team. There are a lot of questions about how it's run. Trent Baalke, the general manager, staying on and running the coaching search. Some candidates weren't thrilled with that development. They want to see more change than just head coach. So you saw Byron Leftwich, you know, kind of flirt with the job and ultimately not end up with it. Jim Caldwell, Bill O'Brien, a lot of names. They end up with Peterson. Peterson is a Super Bowl winning head coach that they feel can work with Trevor Lawrence, help develop Trevor Lawrence, and whatever questions he had about them, he got answered to his satisfaction. Watch for some more moves. They're still talking to Rick Spielman, who used to be the GM of the Minnesota Vikings, about a front office job there. There could be other changes in Jacksonville still to come.
And of course, and yet clearly this is about Lawrence, first and last and everywhere in between. And even in the statement that they released announcing the hiring of Doug Peterson, they talked at length about his success developing Carson Wentz and the success that Wentz had early in his career when Peterson was the coach. So we won't spend a lot of time on this, but RC, let me ask a very simple question. With Trevor Lawrence there, can Doug Peterson, is he the right guy? And can anyone turn that into a contender in the foreseeable future?
I mean, we've seen the Jacksonville Jaguars be a contender, and we've seen them get to the AFC Championship with Blake Bortles. And so if Doug Peterson understands what the undertaking is in Jacksonville, I believe he can do it. We're talking about a guy that won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. He allowed Carson Wentz in 2017 to be one of the MVP front runners until he was injured in LA. And so I think when you look at what the Jacksonville Jaguars need to happen, they need leadership, right? They need someone that understands how to delegate, and they need someone who can help develop Trevor Lawrence. We saw flashes of what Trevor Lawrence could be last year, but it wasn't consistent, right? We didn't see the type of consistency that we need. And I believe a guy like Doug Peterson, that type of pedigree, that type of understanding of the game, can take Jacksonville to the next level. But it won't be easy. He has to see what he needs to do in order to be a coach that can bring that team the same place he brought the Philadelphia Eagles.
Let me get Tannenbaum in here. Mike, what does he need to do? Give me the first two steps or whatever that might be that Jacksonville needs to make right this minute to make Trevor Lawrence what everyone said he should be, which is John Elway and Andrew Luck rolled into one.
Offensive line. They have to do a much better job of protecting him. Invest resources in him in a meaningful way, not Cam Robinson. If they could protect him, he should be an all-time great. And let me add one other thing, Greeny. Over the past year, Doug Peterson, every Wednesday at 5 o'clock, we have a professional development Zoom. This guy is a life learner. He spent a lot of time with Wade Phillips, Eric Mangini, John Fox. They're going to get an even better version of him. Doug really invested the past year in getting better. I think this is a great hire. We know what he can do as a quarterback developer. They're getting a much better coach than what he was in Philadelphia because he spent the last year working on his craft.
Man, last year was such a disaster in Jacksonville with the Urban Meyer piece of equipment. I want to get to other things. Give me a quick thought here.
I like it. I think that the personalities that they had from their old coach in Meyer to Peterson are completely different.
Yeah.
I think it's going to work well. And, I have some buddies that were with the Eagles when he was the head coach there, and they had nothing but great reviews on him and say he's a terrific coach. So I think that's going to be a great fit.
We'll see. It's a division where maybe some things can turn around. They have in the past. So we'll wish him luck there. Meanwhile, despite an early playoff exit, the Dallas Cowboys, as you most questionably know, will be keeping Mike McCarthy as their head coach. The D coordinator, Dan Quinn, is also coming back after being considered for many head coaching vacancies. Jerry Jones is happy to have Quinn back, and I want you to hear what he said here.
All of us wanted Dan to stay. That was a key to our continuity here. Every one of those three coaches have said they'd love to be the head coach of the Cowboys. Everyone. And so my point is that, in my mind, that has a lot of logic as to why they might not take a job now rather than wait and see how the cards go in future. He's certainly qualified. He's very qualified. Yes, I would consider. If I didn't have a coach, I would have been interviewing him for coach. Mike knows that someday somebody will be coach of the Cowboys other than him.
I'm sorry. Every time I want to move on, they keep pulling me back in. Everyone's going to send me tweets. All you talk about is the Cowboys, but I can't help it. Jerry Jones just keeps giving us reason to. Is Mike McCarthy 77 years old?
No.
How old is he?
58.
All right, so he's in his mind, he's going to be the coach for a while here. So
one would think.
RC, how do you think Mike McCarthy slept last night after hearing Jerry Jones say, well, look, someone else is going to be the coach soon. These guys both want to be. So let's see how the cards play out. RC, help me.
Listen, if you're Mike McCarthy, you have to know that your days are numbered. You have to know that a guy like Dan Quinn will be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. But it's cool, though. At least he won't be replaced by Sean Payton, so he can live with that. When you hear Jerry, like Jerry Jones gives, he gives zero, right? He doesn't care about anything other than what matters to him. And he put Mike McCarthy on notice. He knows that he has this year, and if this year doesn't work out the way that Jerry Jones wants it to, then Mike McCarthy will be out. He said, when Dan Quinn decided to come back, he said Dan Quinn is going to be a coach for the Dallas Cowboys for many years to come. When I heard that, my ears perked up because I said, okay, he's setting up for a coach in waiting. And you remember they would do that in college all the time or do that in the league, that whoever was the defense coordinator, offense coordinator would be a coach in waiting. And that's what Dan Quinn is. So if you're Mike McCarthy, your days are numbered. You make one more mistake, you're out of there. If you don't call the right timeout, if you don't get the ball spiked before you can get a play to end the playoffs, then you are gone. And so Dan Quinn, you already know, he's going to be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
That's right. And Dan, you made a point earlier this morning, and as we were all talking, there's another reason why Dan Quinn can have some patience with regard to getting a head coaching job.
Because he's still getting paid by the Atlanta Falcons for being their head coach, right? There was years left on that contract when they fired him. So he's still making head coach money. Even if the Cowboys' salary is offset, he's still making what he was making in Atlanta. So, yes, that's a big part of the reason Dan Quinn didn't have to jump at a head coach job if one were offered to him, which, honestly, we don't know that it was.
No, we don't know that. But what we do know, at least from what Jerry Jones said there, is that Quinn expressed an interest in becoming the coach of the Cowboys, and Jones suggested he not leave as a result of that conversation. But to circle back to the first thing RC said, I know, Nico, you see it differently.
Yeah.
Who is going to be the coach of the Cowboys next year this time?
Next year, this time, Sean Payton will be the head coach for the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm telling you, Jerry Jones has wanted this guy for a long time. He wants a coach that has the experience, that's been there in the past because he was there years ago. So you look at Jerry Jones and what he wants in a head coach, it's Sean Payton. So Sean Payton's probably going to take a year off, enjoy himself, get back into coaching, and I have a feeling that the Dallas Cowboys would be his spot to land.
Yeah, I have thought that as well. Mike Tannenbaum, what do you think?
Let me take you behind the curtain. Here's what Jerry Jones is probably saying to Mike McCarthy. Don't worry about Newt Rockne, Don Shula, Dan Quinn. If we don't do better with penalties, we led the league in total penalties, offensive penalties. You're not coming back from Oxnard in training camp. We were the most least disciplined team in the league. You have to fix it. If you do that, you could be here for a long time. That's the answers to the test. So when you sit in that seat, guys, there's going to be distractions. It could be Dan Quinn. It could be Sean Payton. But that was a team that lacked discipline. That's what needs to be fixed. And I'm sure that's what Jerry and Stephen Jones is saying to Coach McCarthy behind closed doors.
Now, RC, we had this conversation on this show yesterday about the pending departure, we think, of Aaron Rodgers from the NFC. And Tom Brady has retired. And the question becomes, who's the team to beat in that conference next year? And almost everyone here said the Rams. And then I changed the question up and I said, if the Cowboys had a coach you believed in a little more, would it change your mind? And it kind of caught everyone stuck in their tracks. And I'm not in the business of firing people. I wouldn't want someone doing that for me. I'm not doing that for anybody else. Mm-hmm. But that certainly does feel like a factor in all this, doesn't it, RC?
No, it's absolutely a factor. When I said it probably week two or week three that Mike McCarthy was the worst coach on the Dallas Cowboys staff. I also said that his mismanagement of the clock, his mismanagement of the game would be a reason why this team ended up losing in the playoffs. And I was absolutely correct. When you look at the Dallas Cowboys, we feel like they have all the talent that they need in order to be Super Bowl contenders, but it never comes to fruition on the field. And a huge part of that to me was Mike McCarthy. If we believe that, and it's crazy, Greeny, we're talking about a Super Bowl winning coach that we don't believe in. What we watched on the field last year with this team was absolutely inexcusable, and he's a large reason as to why they lost. If you get a guy like Dan Quinn, even though he's never won a Super Bowl, and we watched him give up 28-3 to the New England Patriots, I think we'd believe in the Dallas Cowboys more than we already do now, and we would continue to lead with them on the A's of get up.
Well, we would do that either way. But I mean, what you're seeing there in that video, Nico, that's the last 15 seconds of the Cowboys season. I use that term advisedly because they only had 14 seconds left to try and do what they were trying to do. Go ahead.
RC just said, you know, the comeback from the Falcons, and I did this. That's that's the last game I played.
That was your last game. Pretty good way to go out. But you do believe it's going to be Sean Payton, though. You
I think do. Sean yeah, winds I think up Sean in Payton, that chart. I think Sean Payton's going to take a year off, and then I think they figure it out with the contract situation of Sean Payton, that what he has left with the Saints. And then they figure it out. He's the Cowboys head coach.
All right, we will figure it all out as we go. This is a football Friday for us as we lead into a weekend. And then it's Super Week, and we'll get to that in a moment here. In a league filled with great young quarterbacks, why has Joe Burrow emerged as the guy teams would want with everything on the line? We will explain it as we continue. Plus, a quarterback who's won it all is Russell Wilson. Why comments from a former teammate are raising a lot of eyebrows right now? You need to hear them, and you will, as we get up with you on ESPN.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Get Up is brought to you by Royal Caribbean. Rise to the vacation. Come seek. And by Lexus. Experience amazing. All right, busy on this football Friday. So much going on. Dan Graziano, let's run the hurry up. What do we know about the Saints coaching situation?
Saints are going to try and interview Eric Bieniemy, the Chiefs offensive coordinator, who hasn't really gotten much action this cycle, but is trying to get an interview scheduled this weekend with New Orleans. They've already talked to Brian Flores, Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, the Lions defensive coordinator, used to be on Dennis Allen's staff there, also candidates. Saints could be moving along toward a conclusion here pretty soon.
Right. That, of course, was Flores that we saw there. And that is he still a candidate for that job in Houston?
Yes. My understanding is he is one of the finalists in Houston, along with Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon and Josh McCown, the former NFL quarterback who started his coaching career on Houston staff last year. So, yes, I everything we've been told is Flores is still a candidate in Houston. Whether he gets it obviously remains to be seen.
And then, of course, the specter of the lawsuit that was filed by Brian Flores continues to hover over so much of the NFL's business right now. And yesterday, both the Giants and the Broncos, particularly John Elway, had things to say.
Detailed denials, first from the Giants about the interview process. They actually, their statement included Flores' itinerary when he was there for the interview, who he met with and when. They insist that they had not made a decision when Bill Belichick sent him that now infamous text. And they interviewed Brian Daboll and him and Leslie Frazier in person after that took place. And then the Broncos, of course, pushing back on the notion that they showed up late and hung over from a night of drinking the night before, obviously. John Elway and company denying that and saying the interview was serious and that they did consider him a real candidate.
All right, so there's still so much of that to be figured out. Meanwhile, the Pro Bowl continues, and the Chiefs safety Tyrann Mathieu had this to say about the Flores situation.
I'm not surprised. Being in this league 9 years, you hear a lot of things like that that kind of takes place. But I was more so proud of him, really taking a stand. Not just for himself, but, for a lot of black coaches, around the league that, seem to get overlooked or seem to just be, an interview that just get checked off on. So it's a lot of black coaches that are capable of leading men, capable of, winning, and really capable of leading, these franchises and organizations. So I'm really hoping that, things can change and then a lot of these black men could, start to get these jobs.
All right. And so, Brian Clark, we had Brian Flores, of course, in here just the other day, and we've had quite a few people comment, but I've not yet heard from you, and our entire audience knows you so well from this show. So, RC, as you have sat and digested all the things that have happened over the last 3 days with this, what thoughts do you have?
Well, I mean, the first thing is it isn't surprising, right? Brian Flores saying some of the things that he's said, some of the racial bias that goes into hiring coaches in the NFL. Like, these are things that we know. It's 29 white billionaires that own these teams, and they hire with familiarity. There's nepotism involved. And so a guy like Brian Flores is simply talking about the process, right? And the process being unfair, the process not being equal. But I do believe it starts at the bottom. It starts at the inception of the coaching tree, the quality control coaches, the position coaches, being in rooms that allow you to become head coaches. If you look at this game, 80% of the coaches hired are coordinators. And when you think about the guys who are offensive coordinators, it's rarely a black coach. It's rare that we get to have Doug Petersons. It's rare that you have Kellen Moores and all of these guys who ended up being head coaches who are considered the next thing. And Brian Flores is simply bringing light to or simply calling attention to something we already knew. The process isn't fair. The league doesn't care about diversity in the way that they say they do. And it was proven to us. On the same day that Brian Flores made these allegations, the league comes out and says, you know what? These things are done without merit. We're asking the league to investigate who runs them. Roger Goodell doesn't work for us. He doesn't work for the players. He doesn't work for the coaches. He works for the owners. And the owners run this in a way that ownership and labor are hugely separated. And I think until there is something put in place that holds these owners accountable, we will continue to see the same thing when it comes to hiring. The Rooney Rule was put in place 20 years ago, and we have less black coaches now than we had then.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say the Rooney Rule was well-intended, is well-intended. The intentions of it, I think, are honorable. But I think it is also inarguable that the purposes it was meant to serve are not being served, at least to their fullest. I saw what some of the comments yesterday that suggest that there have been improvements made. I'm sure there have been, but it is certainly not where most people would like it to be, Dan. So where does it leave us?
Well, in some cases, the Rooney Rule has become a joke. Think about our last segment. We talked about, is Dan Quinn the coach in waiting of the Cowboys, and Sean Payton? That's illegal. And I'm not saying the Cowboys are doing that, but the fact that we bring it up and it's believable tells you that the system could be broken. If that's in fact how decisions are made, and I believe sometimes it is, then no, you're supposed to throw this open and interview certain candidates and specifically candidates of color from outside your organization. So I do think it's interesting to hear Tyrann Mathieu speak out. I don't think it should be on the players to help correct this problem. That's crazy. It should be on the owners to correct this problem for themselves. But if the players begin to speak out, and if this is an issue that's of great importance to them, then maybe that's a voice the owners will listen to, right? If more people say what Tyrann Mathieu is saying, that's something that could potentially help. And again, I'm not saying it's their responsibility to do it. It's not. But that's the kind of thing that if it's something that moves players, I would say don't be afraid to speak out because maybe you can get something done.
And RC, I asked Brian Flores the question when he was sitting here. Does he believe he will ever get a chance to coach again? He is, to my knowledge, still a finalist for two of the four
that's
jobs
what
that
we're
remain,
told.
New Orleans and Houston. But at the minimum, it is an awkward circumstance when you are suing the people that you're trying to get a job with. Do you think he'll ever coach in the NFL again?
You know what? I believe he can. I don't know if he will or not. It all depends on how the owners will view this. Will the owners view this in a way where he's untouchable, where he's a guy that you don't want in your building at all? I think the one thing I always say is the reason we continue to see the same hires is because there's only a certain few people that are in the rooms, right? There's only a certain few people that have a voice when it comes to ownership. And if you look at Brian Flores as a pariah, if you look at Brian Flores as someone who is bucking the system in a way to where you can't have him in your building, then he is, you know, subsequently sacrificed his career in order to further the plight of black coaches. We watched Colin Kaepernick give up being a quarterback in the league because he believed in something else. This league has shown us that if you stand for something other than what the NFL believes in, that they don't need you. And I think Brian Flores has taken that stand. Brian Flores seems to understand what comes along with what he has done. But if he never coaches again, it's going to be terrible because he's a dude who understands coaching. He's a dude who understands leading organizations, and he's been successful. It will only be because he's black and because he chose to stand against the establishment.
Yeah, I just jotted down these names here. At the beginning of this cycle, Flores, Leftwich, Bieniemy, Bowles, Frazier. These were all names we thought were going to be a part of the process. To this point, we haven't seen any of them be hired. All right, we'll leave that there for the moment. We will continue. We'll get to Super Week as we go on next. 2 years ago, the Bengals won just two games. Last year, they won four. This year, they're in the Super Bowl. How did Joe Burrow do this? We will get to the bottom of it in a moment. And here we go, Graziano. Hembo's coming for you. And this is a Burrow-related question. You know, he gets sacked a lot. So the question is, which quarterback took the most sacks in a single Super Bowl? It's a tough one. I think he's got a shot. We'll find out next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I want to take everyone behind the scenes. Literally 10 seconds ago, I walked over here. I said, Graziano, you know this one? And he just said, I do.
I do.
So let's see if he's right. Joe Burrow is in the Super Bowl.
He is.
He gets sacked a lot.
He did.
which quarterback took the most sacks in a single Super Bowl?
So he wanted me to say Cam Newton because Cam Newton got sacked 6 times against the Broncos in the Super Bowl. And I remember thinking, well, that's got to be close to a record. And sure enough, it was. But that night we find out that the record was, in fact, Roger Staubach got sacked 7 times by one of those steel curtain defenses in the 70s.
He was right. He does know it. That's correct. It was Roger Staubach who got sacked 7 times in Super Bowl 10. You are a machine. That's unreal. Newton and Joe Theismann were each sacked 6 times.
All right.
In Super Bowls, but Staubach is correct, and so Graziano opens up his lead. He's ahead by a safety now in the early going. Meanwhile, let's talk about Burrow. I mean, he gets sacked a lot, but my goodness, he's been spectacular. Not only did he not have a sophomore slump after returning from a knee injury, all he did was become the youngest player ever to lead the NFL in both completion rate and yards per attempt. And, of course, now he has his team in the Super Bowl, so those were hardly empty calories. He helped the Bengals go from worst to first in the division. They won the North with that big win over Kansas City and, of course, has just been spectacular in the playoffs. Clutch game after clutch game. They beat the Raiders. They beat the Titans. They beat the Chiefs. And they're in the Super Bowl. And he was talking yesterday about the week ahead and what it's all been like.
You know, it just feels like another week. Obviously, it's the Super Bowl, and we're going to have to try to eliminate as many distractions as we can. But I've always played well in these kind of moments. And I think it's just because all of these moments come towards the end of the year. You know, I feel like I get better as the year progresses just because you have more reps, more film under your belt, corrected all the mistakes that you've made and throughout the entire year. And I'm good at recalling that kind of stuff. And so when you get to the end of the year, you just have all those reps banked and you just keep getting better and better.
Well, he has certainly done that. We said yesterday he's never lost a game he needed to win, and here's a better way of putting that. Between LSU and the Bengals, he's 7-0 in postseason games. In those, he's thrown 24 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and averages 363 yards a game. So let's bring the guys in on this thing here, and I will start, RC, with you. Again, he's your LSU guy. You were there for all this. But what is the quality? He just described it interestingly. But what he said is true of everybody. Everyone has had more reps and more film at the end of a season. Yeah. Not everyone elevates their play. What is the quality, particularly in a quarterback, that enables them to be at their best in the biggest games?
I mean, if you look at Joe Burrow, he never blinks, right? He never flinches. If you watch Joe Burrow on the sideline, whether he's being sacked 9 times against the Tennessee Titans or if he's down 21-3 to the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, he never looks panicked, right? He never is one of those guys that wears the game on his face. And I think that's what we've seen from Joe Burrow, that whenever he needs to make a play, his pulse rate is so low, right? He's so locked in that he can do whatever he needs to do in those critical football moments. And I think, you know, you remember me, man. It was like week 2 or week 3 of 2019. They had just beaten Texas, and Paul Feinbaum was talking about Trevor Lawrence. And I said, no, this guy, Joe Burrow, is different. He has a confidence in himself that makes you believe in him. And if you think about the Cincinnati Bengals, you think about Zach Taylor, they know that they have a chance in every game because this dude will not blink, because this dude will not flinch. And I think Joe Burrow understands how important these moments are, and more than that, how much they don't come around. And so I think when you look at this Super Bowl and what they've accomplished, the Cincinnati Bengals, they know that they may not never get this time again, and Joe Burrow believes he has to capitalize.
I will make an admission to you and on these airwaves right now, Ryan Clark, you were the first person who said that early that year he's going to go ahead of Tua Tagovailoa in the draft. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, RC's nuts. He's out of his mind. There's no way in the world he's going to go ahead of Tua in the draft. And, of course, as usual, you were 100% right. And Graziano, you've been around that team a good deal this year. And the degree to which he is the unquestioned leader in just his second season, it's remarkable.
It is. And a couple weeks ago, when I had their playoff game against the Raiders, I asked some of his teammates, some of his veteran teammates, how does a young guy do that? Because the quarterback has to be the leader of the team. How does a guy establish himself as that kind of leader in such a short period of time? And Tyler Boyd, their wide receiver, said to me, look, it's not hard when he comes in with the same kind of chip on his shoulder that the rest of us have, when he works as hard as the rest of us do. That makes it easy for him to slip into that role. It's confidence, RC, and it's authenticity. The guy knows who he is. He's comfortable in his own skin. The stuff he says is not boasting. He truly believes it. This is a guy who, middle of last year, decided he needed to spend this offseason, this past offseason, working on his arm strength, improving his arm strength. Then he tore his ACL. And I think in a lot of cases, you'd have a player say, well, I have to devote my offseason to ACL rehab now. I got to scrap that plan about arm strength. He did both. And he came back with greater arm strength. He, you know, worked on body mechanics, that kind of thing. Yeah. He has a mental strength to him that I think is serving him very well and enables him to accomplish things at a high level.
Now, here he is in the Super Bowl in just his second year in one of the most dramatic turnarounds in the history of the sport. We'll have much more football as we continue on this Football Friday here. But right now, take a look who's made his way into our studio. Jay Williams is here, and we're going to run the floor, Jay Will, with a bunch of NBA stories from last night, including Trae Young going for 43 points last night, knocking off the best team in the NBA in the Phoenix Suns. Jay, how about the performance of Trae Young last night?
Look, there's a reason why he's a starter in the Eastern All-Star squad, right? And the one thing you love about Trae is just his style in which he plays. Now, I give this team a lot of credit. They won their last 8 of 9 games, and defensively, their defensive rating numbers are exponentially greater. They're healthy. Offensively, they're clicking. Look for the Atlanta Hawks to start making a run in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, they've had a disappointing start to their season, but they came on late last year, and they're starting to do it again now. Let's go out west. The Warriors win their 8th straight last night. They're playing without Draymond. Klay Thompson had his best game since his return. Steph Curry had 20 last night. So out west, we have this debate on Countdown all the time. Are you Team Warriors or Team Suns in the West?
I'm starting to lean more towards becoming Team Memphis Grizzlies.
Really?
Yes, I think the Grizzlies are going to compete with the Warriors and the Suns for the Western Conference Championship. What I do love about last night for Klay Thompson, go back to the 2011 draft. Do you remember who didn't select him with the 10th overall draft pick? The Sacramento Kings. That's why I gave him 23 last night.
And then there are the Nets, who lose again. They'll be back in action tonight, but they've lost 6 straight games. And obviously, it's been such a weird season. Since Kevin Durant got hurt, they have one of the worst records of any team in the sport. How would you describe right now what's wrong with the Brooklyn Nets?
I don't think there's anything wrong with the Brooklyn Nets. I think right now you just have to be cool, calm, and collective. And I will say this. I projected a month ago with KD being out, with Kyrie only being able to play road games, that this might be the best thing to happen for the Nets because they would drop in that 5-8 range as really succeeding for the playoffs. If they stay in that range, can you imagine they're going to have the majority of their games with the big three on the court and Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant.
And it benefits them to be on the road. Yes. I understand it for those who don't know why that is, because Kyrie Irving can't play home games. Isn't there something intrinsically wrong with that, though? The idea that in the regular season, the best thing that can happen for this team is to lose a little bit more so they don't wind up with the best possible seeding?
Don't we always devalue the regular season MVP?
But shouldn't we not? Shouldn't there be some significance to these games they're playing?
Look, these are the dog days of the NBA for me in February. I understand everybody wants every team to be great all the time and dominate the league. What matters is the playoffs. And when this team is healthy during the playoffs, that's all that will count.
We would assume. When KD is out there, we would assume everything will be fine. But I'm watching them with Kyrie and James Harden together. And you would think with just the two of them, they'd be better than they have looked with just the two of them. I know Harden's got a hand or whatever that is, and Kyrie is still playing his way back into form. But I don't feel like they should be struggling to the degree that they are struggling.
I understand. There are a lot of new pieces that are adding on to this team. There are a lot of questions about what they do defensively. You can even make the question of Steve Nash and his adjustments as a coach. I understand all that. All I'm saying to you, Greeny, is when you remove the leading scorer in the NBA, one of the most efficient players to ever play the game, and his leadership and that toughness that it brings to the table from the dog mentality, that means something.
Oh, I get that, obviously. Well, we'll see. We'll see if Brooklyn's able to turn it around as they continue. In the meantime, I want to shift gears here because something that I know is of great personal significance to you and to our friend Jay Billis and so many others is this. Tomorrow night, another chapter of this rivalry. Duke and Carolina, one of the great rivalries, if not the best in all of sports today. But this one is a particularly significant trip across Tobacco Road because this will be Coach K's last ever game in Chapel Hill, and so I'm delighted to have two of Coach K's great players with me here today, not just Jay Will, but Jay Billis, who joins us as well. And Jay, how do we put into words what this means, Coach K going to that place for the last time?
Well, it's another milestone in his retirement season. I don't know that this is going to be quite as emotional as the last game is going to be that's in Cameron Indoor Stadium. And look, they could still play in the ACC tournament, too, so it's not necessarily the last time they'll square off. But, you know, there's an argument to be made that this will be the last time Coach K sets foot in Chapel Hill because he doesn't go there except for games. So that'll be kind of interesting. And I don't think Carolina's going to have any sort of ceremony from what I've heard, from what Jay Will mentioned to me this morning on his radio show. So it'll be more about the game and the rivalry and the competition than it is about Coach K. But that's certainly the undertone of it, that this is the last time Coach K, that Carolina will have a shot to beat Coach K in Chapel Hill, and the last time he'll have a chance to beat them there.
What do you think it means to him, Jay? What do you think this trip means to Coach K?
I do think there's an emotional element, because the emotional element will come through the passion that he'll want to win this game. Like, you know, JB talked about this morning, it's about the game and the competitive mindset that he has. But I do think for what this rivalry has meant, not only to him, but to the world of college basketball and just in general to all sports, this is a monumental moment, and it's for first place in the ACC. Mm-hmm. So there's something to play for, which he'll always find a reason, but there's a little extra added momentum.
It's remarkable when you think about the span of time when he started. It was during the, you know, Dean Smith, the legendary legacy there at Carolina, now all these years later and all of that. How would you describe what this – Jay, what does a win in North Carolina or against North Carolina mean to him relative to any other win? You were there at the very beginning when it first really got going. How much more important is this game than any other game on the schedule to Coach K?
Well, Coach K, like all coaches will say every game's important, and they try to downplay certain things. And while this game is no more important than any other game, it's bigger. And he's said that to the players. There have been times in the locker room he said, hey, this is our system against their system. It's our way against their way. You know, stuff like that. And all the players know it. Everybody knows this is the biggest game you play in. And outside of a championship game, an NCAA championship game, a Final Four thing, which carries a different kind of significance, this is the game where you're remembered how you perform in the Duke Carolina rivalry. Everybody remembers it, and it's bigger than anything else that they do, and he knows that.
I'll give you an example of that, JB. My sophomore year when we won a national championship, you know, considering that we don't really have a professional sports team in that massive radius between the RDU area, guess what people said to me? Like, North Carolina, oh, we got you that year. Mm. We got you that year, right? Not about, hey, congratulations on winning a championship. It's, we got you that year. And it's something as a player that you can't run away from, because that's all people talk about in that area.
By the way, what have you aged, like 10 minutes? We were making comments of this.
I had hair then, JB, I had hair.
you look exactly the same as you did. Jay Billis, we'll see you tomorrow night with that. Jay Will, thank you guys. Thank you both very much. Should be really special tomorrow. It's part of a huge weekend we have. Look, tomorrow we have the NHL All-Star Game. That's at 3 Eastern on ABC and ESPN+. Then we have a couple of college hoop rivalry sonic blockbusters. We got Baylor, Kansas, and then the one that we've been talking about, Duke and Carolina. And then Sunday, the Pro Bowls on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and Disney XD. What a weekend lineup for all the sports fans. As we continue, the Seahawks have been to 2 Super Bowls with Russell Wilson. So why does one former teammate think he could have done more to help? Wait till you hear this. You will next. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Back on a Football Friday on Get Up, and we're heading to Seattle, where Russell Wilson's future with the Seahawks remains uncertain despite 2 years remaining on his contract. But I want you to hear this. Former Seahawks linebacker K.J. Wright talked about all the money Wilson has made and its impact on the team.
You never want to count nobody's pockets. You never want to count nobody's pockets. The way I look at it is, if I have all this, if I have this money, and if my goal is to win, then you got to take a little bit less to to eat so everybody can eat and so you can win. If you control it, which he's earned every penny he's gotten.
Totally.
But there comes a price. There comes stuff with it. And so that's his decision to make. But we saw how Brady did it, and look at him now. Everybody got things that drives them and motivates them.
Right.
And if it's being one of the highest, then by all means, go do your thing. But if it's winning Super Bowls, you may have to find different ways to adjust.
Huh. Hmm. Isn't that interesting?
I mean,
that's the kind of thing. I want to start with the players on this, because that, at least in my experience, and Dan, I assume in yours as well, that's off limits, right?
Yeah.
Guys don't talk about other guys' money. RC, that seemed to me to be something I can't recall ever hearing.
Yeah, that KJ Wright's wrong here. I'm just going to be honest. You mentioned Tom Brady. Tom Brady has been the anomaly or the outlier when it comes to the contracts that he has taken, the contracts that he was given, and the way he wanted to be so he can, you know, have a team that could be built around him. When you're a quarterback in this league, you should get every single dollar that you can get, every single dollar that allows you to feed your family that you have worked for and that Russell Wilson, in this case, has earned. And so for KJ Wright to mention his money, and here's one of those things, right? Like when you're about to say something disrespectful, you always go, no disrespect, but KJ Wright knows he shouldn't be counting other people's money. And he said that before he continued the conversation about Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson earned that money. Russell Wilson was a guy that has carried this team through many of these years after the Legion of Boom. And so to me, KJ Wright is wrong in this instance. And tell me what other quarterback, other than Tom Brady, that has taken hometown discounts. None of them have. And so to call out Russell Wilson in this way almost seems personal to me for KJ Wright.
The numbers you're looking at on your screen demonstrate that going back as far as 2016, there's only been one time that a quarterback who took up as much as 15% of a team's cap wound up in the Super Bowl, and that was Matt Ryan in Atlanta that one year. So while it may be true, while it is obviously true that the quarterback taking up less of a finite amount of money is going to benefit the rest of the team, there has always been something off limits about other players saying it. Now, you were there in New England when Brady was doing that all the time. What is your perspective on this?
Yeah, and look, when you're in Tom Brady's situation, throughout his career, there was moments where he decided, okay, we'll manage some things, we'll move some money around to bring in some different pieces that will help us as a team win a Super Bowl. And that did work out in New England. But I can also tell you, when you're trying to go negotiate your contract, if you're the best guy on your team isn't making top dollar, their number one negotiation chip with you is, well, we can't pay you that much.
Mm-hmm.
Look at our best player doesn't make number one money in the NFL. He's the best quarterback, but he's not the highest paid quarterback because we're helping other people, help other positions.
Right.
So, I mean, look at Seattle. When they had Russell Wilson on a rookie contract, they had a great defense. They had a ton of people paid on defense. Once they had to put a lot of money in the quarterback position, a lot of those guys had to go. They had to cut a lot of contracts. So
right.
It's a decision. You have to make a choice. Do you want a highly paid guy? Do you want the highest paid guy? If you're that guy, can you make the pieces around you work, and does your draft work? Because if you don't pay, if you pay that guy a lot, your draft has to win.
Those Seattle teams had Richard Sherman, fifth-round pick, Cam Chancellor.
Yes.
I mean, that's where they were really crushing it, getting high-level, championship-level production from the middle and late rounds of the draft. So I think teams use this as a crutch, right? I mean, because we see teams manipulate the salary cap different ways. I think teams use this as a crutch. Say, well, if we pay the quarterback, we can't pay the rest of the roster. When in fact, all it is a different kind of jigsaw puzzle. Like Russell Wilson had the highest cap hit of any quarterback this year, and they didn't make the playoffs. But, Jimmy Garoppolo had the fifth highest, and he was still playing a game last week. Matthew Stafford's a top 10 cap hit, and he's in the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes this year had the 20th highest cap hit in the league, and he didn't make the Super Bowl. So I think it's very easy to look at a list like we just showed and say, oh, well, this means that you can't do it if you pay the quarterback a huge portion of your cap. I think that that's an excuse that teams use, and I don't think it's a player's responsibility to help a team manage its salary cap, and I have no idea why KJ Wright would say, I don't like to pick another man's pocket and then go ahead and do exactly that in the next breath.
The bigger topic I'd like to get back to, because it's not about whether there's an obligation to, but I also do think there's something in the priorities that some quarterbacks might have that Brady had, and the way you could almost view it as an investment into something in the future. We'll talk more about it as we go. In the meantime, it's been an unbelievable week here. Let's relive some of our favorite moments.
That's how we start this off.
Let's go.
Dan Graziano's got stories. Damian Woody's got a piano. Mike Tannenbaum paid for it. Bart Scott is ready to go. We can't wait to hear what he has to say.
Getting the gritty with my family.
We gritty in, we getting to get through the first Super Bowl.
A little help?
You're on your own, Rex.
Dan is excited.
Here's the victory lap for America.
What's your favorite Tom Brady moment?
Him being hammered after that boat party celebration with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
We ain't wearing no fake pendants around here, bro.
Need my sunglasses.
Okay. Will Zach Wilson of the Jets slump or jump?
I may jump, but there really ain't anywhere else to go except out of the league.
I can't even argue with that.
I got to give credit to Greeny and Grass. You guys brought the energy today.
This mess is an homage.
We're going to need some cleaning. We need a cleaning crew in here at some point. We're just making messes all the time. NHL All-Star Weekend starts tonight in Vegas. Skills competition on ESPN and the app, 7:30 Eastern. Tomorrow, we've got the All-Star Game on ABC and the app at 3 Eastern. Should be great action there. 14 3-on-3, three-game tournament, all back. So check it out for all the hockey fans. In the meantime, as we roll on, Mike McCarthy had me feeling pretty good coming into this week about his status. And then Jerry Jones had some things to say. Wait until you hear this next.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.